present Babblewick Hall by Scott Cherry, starring Nicholas Le Prevost and Forbes Masson.
To get you dressed for breakfast, Squire.
I thought I'd lay out your grey breeches and white waistcoat.
Very good.
Oh, and might I suggest you wear your own hair this morning? It's not the weather for a wig. The wind's been that rowdy.
I was ringing the garden bell all night.
Sir, where are you?
I'm here. Oh,
what are you doing?
I am balancing. Barney managed to tie some hemp between the windows, and as you can see, I'm reporting. In the manner of the great Veronese entertainer, Silvestro Spenducci.
Oh, you'll break your neck, Squire.
You remember, we saw him on the high wire stand as well, juggling four Dresden teapots. Now, get take another step.
You've lost your wits.
I've never been happier, Augustus. You know why?
You've discovered opium.
No. I've discovered a book. I've been reading, studying the discourses of our greatest living artist, Sir Joshua Reynolds.
Squire, you promised me.
On your mother's life, you swore you'd never read another book again.
But I keep telling you, you haven't the head for literature. Now, come down immediately before you hurt yourself.
But Augustus, Sir Joshua's made the most startling of all discoveries. He asserts that any achievement in life, any excellence in any field, is the result not of ability or of talent, but of hard work and persistence.
And that's the most startling of all discoveries.
But don't you see? It means that if I work hard enough, I can do anything. Anything.
Oh, no.
I've always thought my failures were due to the gross mediocrity of my talents.
They are.
But all I lack is persistence. And according to Sir Joshua's book, given enough dedication and effort, there is no reason why I can't write like Milton, paint like Titian, or walk the high wire like that Greek Veronese entertainer, Silvestro Spenducci. I've been practicing all night, and I'm not a bit tired.
Are you sure you're not on opium?
Observe my concentration.
Why, come down before you kill yourself.
Marvel at my balance.
If Molly comes in, she'll see you right up your nightshirt.
Really? Oh, what? I think I...
I'll catch you, Squire.
Augustus, why aren't you helping me up?
Because you're sitting on my head, Squire.
You two
be? We've been working in the yard, haven't we, Brownie?
Aye. Well, your breakfast's on the table.
I don't want it.
Me neither. But it's your favourite, giblets on toast.
Oh, we're too excited to eat, aren't we, Brownie?
Yeah.
Molly, we've mended the wagon.
What?
And you know what the Squire said?
As soon as it was mended, he promised he'd take Wolf on holiday.
To see the sea. Oh, so we did.
You've been to the coast, haven't you, Molly?
When I was a laundromat, Mrs. Dove, she took her husband to Bridlington.
Bridlington?
To see if the salt water would cure him of the itch.
So what was it like?
Ooh, it was like a red saw that went all up his arm.
No, Bridlington. Were it nice?
Oh, it had everything. Sand.
Sand.
Ornamental garden.
Oh.
Hot and cold baths.
Oh, Molly, I've never had a hot bath.
I've never had a bath. Well, Mrs. Knight.
Hello, Jack.
When do we harness up the horses and load up?
I'm sorry.
They put the wheels on the wagon, Mr. Knight.
It means we can go on holiday.
To Bridlington.
To visit the chat room
and get drunk singing. Here are the turns in the fair by the sea. A job with six and a talking three. George and the Dragon and Marvellous Farm. And a girl of 18 and string wolves on her ass.
Stop it, both of you.
Only a bit of loose jollity, Mr. Snipe.
No one's going on holiday.
Eh?
What?
You better all sit down.
But...
You too, Molly.
Oh. What is it?
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Oh?
I have to tell you that the Squire has finally turned completely lunatic.
He's always been lunatic.
No. I mean, his brain is now cracked to such a degree that...
He started to dribble.
Well, no.
He's wetting himself?
No.
Oh, don't say he's been running round the village in nothing but a ribbon.
What I'm trying to say, if you'll all let me finish...
Sorry, Mr. Snipe.
...is that the Squire has been reading a book.
Oh.
And that this book has convinced him that given sufficient effort of will, he can do anything.
Oh, no.
And having failed to turn himself into the world's greatest circus entertainer, the squire is now intent on becoming our nation's leading composer. Mr. Grant.
Tis I, Mr. Doublewick, tis I.
Oh, sir, I can't begin to tell you how grateful I am that you could come.
Oh,
that I should have at Babblewick Hall, Yorkshire's finest music teacher.
Oh, please.
And all the way from sunny Skipton. I trust the roads were not too hazardous or rough.
Exceedingly hazardous, Mr. Babblewick.
Oh, no.
The stagecoach was just passing Wakefield when we were stopped by a highwayman.
Then you were robbed?
Oh, no, sir. As fortune would have it, the postillion was able to shoot away a good part of the highwayman's face with his blunderbuss.
Oh, good.
So we were able to proceed with pockets and purses intact.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
But I would happily suffer the indignities of the open road. Indeed, I'd willingly travel to John o' Groat's, sir. Nay, across the Andes on foot, without shoes, hopping, to find a pupil such as you.
Oh, Mr. Gluck,
your epistle requesting my services is pure fire, Mr. Babblewick. It blazes. I've never, in all my years of teaching the harpsichord, read such a vigorous communication.
Oh.
When you describe your restless urge to compose as a divine fever, what you are communicating to me, Mr. Babblewick, is your genius.
You really think so?
Within weeks, sir, I will have you composing suites and sonatas, preludes and partitas, flukes and fantasias of such dazzle and spark.
Oh.
And all for a mere 5 guineas a day.
Did you say you'll be charging me 5 guineas a day, Mr. Black?
Dog cheap, I'd say.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure, but...
I assume you've seen my advertisement in the Chronicle.
Yes, indeed, of course.
Then you will know that you are looking at the illustrious and celebrated author of a much admired treatise on harpsichord technique, surpassing fame only by its universally acclaimed addendum, which offers much advice and instruction on the quick fingering of Flemish virginals.
But if that doesn't impress you...
No, Mr. Gardner, it does. It does.
But you haven't the money.
Well, I have indeed, good sir.
Yes,
just... Oh, then let's set to work, Mr. Babblewick. Let's not leave this chamber till we've transformed you into an Alexander ready to conquer the world of music.
Very well.
Show me to your harpsichord and we'll begin.
Sorry, Mr. Snipe. I'm just coming.
I can't find Jack anywhere.
He's just gone up to the hayloft with a pot of Mother Cobb's mild.
You mean he's getting drunk?
He's sulking because we're not off on holiday.
But we still haven't got enough chairs for the Squire's concert. We need Jack's help. There's over 60 people coming.
And how many chairs have you found?
3.
Well, I know there's an old one in the stables.
Ah.
But I don't think he's got any legs. The Squire's still in the drawing room with Mr. Gluck.
No!
All he does is shout at him and call him an imbecile.
You're nothing more than an imbecile. A clumsy, ham-handy, fumbly-fingered imbecile.
I'm doing the best I can, Mr. Glass.
Well, start again.
I don't think the Squire's ready for tonight's performance.
Well, he's been practicing for 3 months. And he's still on the same piece.
Stop! Where was your appoggiatura? Where was it?
My appoggiatura, what?
Appoggiatura.
Oh, God.
It's to be played on the beat.
I'm sorry, Mr. Clark.
I'll show you for the 50th time. On the beat. On the beat. On the beat. The short appoggiatura anticipates the beat to avoid any unpleasant parallel fifths and octaves. Understand? As exemplified in Mr. Bach's variation number 13. It is no good weeping. And it's no good hitting your head against the harpsichord.
I'll try again.
Oh, Mr. Babblewick. Please, I beg of you, don't take part in tonight's concert.
I'm not giving up.
Think of my reputation.
Everyone knows that I, Herbert T. Gluck, was the one that advised Louis Claude Dequan to set his now famous rondo in E minor.
Good.
Just as I was the one Mr. Johann Sebastian Bach turned to when he lost all faith and confidence in the short trill.
My word.
And it was I, and I alone, who received a personal invitation to Bond Street to advise the mighty Mr. Handel on how to put power and swell back into his failing organ.
Oh, Mr. Babelwick.
Please don't destroy my reputation.
I'm sorry, Mr. Clark. The world has made a point of ignoring me for long enough. My neighbours will see that the Squire of Babelwick Hall is capable of a great deal more than they realise. And so confident am I of performing Scarlatti's sonata faultlessly, I shall give you a guinea for every mistake I make.
Jack, Bunny, the guests are all seated in the ballroom.
Right.
Don't we have Mr. Squire's performance?
No, Bunny. Mr. Humble is showing the assembled company the smile that won him a pound of tobacco in a local grinning competition.
Oh,
I'd like to see that.
Me too, even if I am blind drunk.
The Madisons will then read from the diary of their Italian grand tour.
Yeah.
The Squire's performance will follow.
Has Parson Flinch come?
With Mr. and Mrs. Peck and their idiot daughter.
Not the one that thinks she's a Spanish union.
Mm. Squire Lindley's in the company with Whistling Auntie. Dr. Cross has arrived looking very cross. There's Lord and Lady Crocker.
Lord and Lady Crocker?
They've come with four footmen and two ladies in waiting.
Oh, I knew I should have used cream in the carrot pudding.
What did you use?
Lad.
They're all expecting dinner, and if we don't get the food to the tables, we won't be in time to see the Squire's performance.
Oh.
Barney, you take the pigeon pie.
Certainly, Mrs. Knight.
Jack, you take the peas and potatoes.
I'm too drunk.
We'll try.
We shouldn't be having to work like this. The Squire promised us an holiday.
I'll go and get the Squire ready for his performance.
Is he excited?
He is that terrified he's hiding in the laundry basket.
Jingles.
We consider going to Positano.
June the 7th.
We remain in bed.
Get out of the basket, Squire.
No, sir, you can't disappoint your neighbours. They've come especially to hear you play.
Where's Gluck? Sitting at the back, praying. Come on, out you get. Come on.
There we are. There, that's it.
How many are in the audience? Nearly 60.
60? No, don't get back in the basket, Squire. Come on. We've got 60 people.
Think of the embarrassment.
Think of the embarrassment if you don't.
Why do I do it, Augustus?
Why am I always straining at the seams in this way?
Why can't I be like the rest of my class, content to just spend my time superintending the farm and watching the crops?
Did you really want to know?
Yes.
It's because you're a lunatic, Squire.
What?
Because you're as mad as me, butter, and as cracked as the crockery in Molly's kitchen.
How dare you?
Now, come on. The Madisons have nearly finished reading their travel diary.
June the 28th.
We arrive in Rome, and I express my hostility to all things Popish or Roman by exposing my naked nether ends before the Church of San Sebastian.
June the 29th.
We flee Rome, pursued by a stone-throwing mob. Gianni confirms that the Europeans are a pack of angry, vindictive savages, bitterly resentful of the superior taste and breeding common to all Englishmen.
And finally, ladies and gentlemen, brings to a close the journal of our grand tour through France and Italy.
Thank you very much. And now I shall surrender the stage to our generous host, Mr. Fenton Babelwick.
Thank you. I would like to express my sincere thanks to you all for coming to Babelwick Hall, and I should also like to thank you for bringing your own chairs. I
shall now play.
I shall not play. Dominici Scarlatta Sonata.
In a major.
Thank you.
Good luck, Squire.
You'll need it.
Quiet!
Please, God, don't let me fail.
Stayed on for the pigeon pie. They wonder if you'll be joining them downstairs.
You know, Augustus, those first few moments, I did rather well.
Squire, it was all my fault. You mustn't torture yourself. I had no right calling you as mad as made butter.
I'm sure it affected your confidence.
I was so frightened.
Everyone, look at me.
There's no doubt that this is one of your greatest humiliations, but if you can just avoid being seen for the next 6 months.
It's all so terrifying,
yet strangely exciting. You've just got to be brave and...
What?
What did you say?
Performing in front of all those people, Augustus. I never felt so alive, never so invigorated. And you know, I didn't play all that badly.
I'm sorry.
In fact, my treatment of the opening bars showed a melancholy and yet defiant wit, which Scarlatti himself would have found startling.
Squire!
You know, for a few brief moments, I felt divinely inspired.
No. Sir, believe me, you were terrible. Do you understand? You were sublimely, sensationally awful. You were that bad. You rendered Lord and Lady Crocker incontinent.
Where's the protocol?
What are you doing? There's another advertisement. Ah, here it is. The Irene Hopgood Academy for the Study and Practice of the Musical Arts.
In rhythm.
Oh. And she only charges 3 guineas an hour.
Give me that paper. Oh, now, what is she going
to... No, Squire. Give me that paper.
No.
Give it to me. No, get... Let go. Now see what you've done. You've torn the advertisement. Now read the Irene Hopgood Academy for the Study.
Listen. I want you to wait in your bed. Dr. Cross left on foot. I'll see if I can catch him up.
Why?
To see if he has a cure for your monomania.
What? Your monomania! A terrifying affliction which deranges your fancy and turns you into that most tedious and insufferable of all human creatures.
Mm.
The man consumed by one idea.
What are you talking about, Augustus?
I mean, sir, that this species of insanity will possess you with the idea of becoming a great philosopher. And then, fatigued from attempting at most a paragraph on moral theory, you will be seized by the idea that you are a profound poet just because you've been moved to tears by an apple tree losing its blossom. Today, you think that you're a frustrated composer of genius.
But all I want, Augustus, is to succeed at something. Is it really too much to ask? I mean, look. You only have to see the pages of the Chronicle. Hmm? And no wonder I'm so driven when every page concerns men of achievement. Mr. Goldsmith stoops to conquer. Man of science discovers inflammable gas. And here, the Montgolfier brothers fly a giant balloon above the Champs de Mars. Imagine. Being credited as the inventor of a giant balloon. To go down in history as the first man to... conquer the skies!
But these are all men of genius and capacity, Squire. They have all one thing in common. Talent.
And I don't?
Not enough to fill a thimble.
Oh, then you think Sir Joshua's book is wrong, that hard work and persistence aren't enough?
No.
Well, I see. Then perhaps there is nothing for me to do but resign myself to my mediocrity and live the rest of my sorry little life as a gouty squire, superintending the farm, watching the crops. Augustus,
If I give you my word that I shall never be obsessed by another idea, if I swear never to let myself be seized by so much as a single notion, will you promise not to go after Dr. Cross? He might send me to bedroom.
Very well.
Oh, thank you.
No, come on, sir. Let's go and see if the dreaded Madisons have left you anything to eat.
There you are, Mr. Applewick. Come and join us, please. The wife and I are just finishing up your pigeon pie.
I see. We've left Mr. Applewick some of the buttered potatoes, haven't we, Clarissa? Clarissa.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I've just taken the last one.
Yeah, well, never mind. We've sent your servants down for the carrot pudding and the custard.
Sit down, Mr. Applewick.
Thank you. You must be feeling terrible after such a catastrophe.
What?
We're surprised you haven't tried to take your own life.
I have to say that I was most disappointed in your audience, Mr. Babblewick. They couldn't get to their carriages and coaches fast enough.
No.
But we're not like that.
No, we believe in standing by our neighbours.
Yes, even when they've committed the greatest of all social offences. Here's the dessert.
Oh!
This is the carrot pudding.
Yeah. Where's the custard?
I've got it, ma'am. Oh. Well, serve it up. If we can impose on your hospitality till 10 o'clock, Mr. Babblewick, it'll give our servants time to finish the packing. What?
We're taking advantage of the holiday season, you see.
We're leaving for Scarborough, first thing. Oh, I see.
We chose to go to Scarborough because there's a lot less foreigners there than there are in Rome.
Will you be having any pudding, Squire?
Just a little, Jack. Mr. Babblewick, may I make a suggestion concerning... Well, I know the fortune I've made from my metallic pens doesn't in any way qualify me as a man of refinement. I admit that I still to this very day derive my greatest pleasure from spitting in the street.
Charles!
I know it's not true of you, Clarissa. Your refinements are obvious, which is why you're wearing a hat decorated with ostrich feathers and the flowers at the Scarlet Runner Bee. But,
what are you trying to say, Mr. Madison?
Well, all I wish to suggest, Mr. Bellwick, humbly, is that should you ever dare to entertain again, you might consider treating your audience to readings from Mr. Bowdler's Family Shakespeare. It's been trimmed of all offending matter.
One moment, Mr. Madison. Jack, Barney, take away the puddings.
What?
How dare you, Mr. Madison? How dare you and your wife insult me with this gross hypocrisy?
I
thought you were here as kindly neighbours to offer me comfort.
We are.
No, you're not. Let us here to fill your bellies and give your servants time to pack. You just said so.
But
I must ask you both to leave my house immediately.
Well, I say it immediately.
Come, Clarissa. We'll leave Mr. Babblewick alone with his envy.
Envy?
Well, you obviously don't like to hear that we're going on holiday. When it's common knowledge, you're too mean to take your household even as far as Gridlington.
What?
Ask your groom and yard boy. They've been telling the whole village.
Jack!
No, I haven't said a word to no one, Squire.
Me neither.
Aren't you think it's the talk of every table in Yorkshire that you don't believe in rewarding your servants for their fidelity and affection?
I beg your pardon. I bet he doesn't even give you any tips, does he?
No.
No,
he doesn't, no.
Well, it may interest you to know, Mr. Madison, that I will be taking my household away on holiday.
Really, Squire? You think that wagon you've got in the yard is going to take you all the way to the coast?
We won't be going by wagon, Mr. Madison.
No?
I shall be taking my servants on holiday to Bridlington.
Oh, sir!
By balloon.
What? I think your servants have dropped the carrot cake and the custard.
Please, we beg you to reconsider.
Barney, Jack,
sir, through the roof.
What if the balloon falls from the sky?
Fall from the sky, Molly, because I've revolutionized the methods used by the Montgolfier brothers.
Who?
They attempted to keep the balloon up by heat for a primitive fire basket, whereas I am about to use a cylinder of inflammable gas.
Oh.
An invention which means that Henson George Obadiah Babbowick will go down in history as this nation's very first aeronautical
pioneer.
Squire, please.
The horse and coach is dead. English skies will be full of Babelwick balloons.
Now, why don't you just wait while I get Dr. Cross?
I'll get in the basket and inflate the balloon.
Squire, please.
Everyone hold the ropes while I light the gas.
It's going to blow up on the wicket.
Is everyone in position? Oh, come on, come on. Now, just watch the balloon inflate.
Oh, for heaven's sake, you're bigger than a church.
Now, there go the ropes and jump in. We're going up. We're going up. Oh, it works. It works. I said it would work, didn't I? Hey, Augustus. Augustus, where are you?
We're down here, Squire.
I'm sorry, sir, but the professor gave me feet on the ground.
Me too. You can't let me go on my own.
Thank God it meant it didn't lie, Squire, and you've given us feathers.
Good luck, Squire.
Oh! It's like a great big football. I just hope it doesn't burst.
I don't think I like heights.
Come on, everybody. The sooner we get on that wagon, the sooner we get to Bridlington.
This is right.
Well...
Do you think we'll ever see the Squire again?
Of course we will.
He'll probably get to Bridlington before us.
Especially if the wind gets up.
How will he bring it down? What if it carries him out to sea?
Here are the turns in the fair by the sea, a dog that skips and a talking tree.
George and the Dragon, a marvellous bar.
And a girl of 18 years old.
Jack.
I don't know how to calm down.
Babelwick Hall was written by Scott Cherry and starred Nicholas Le Prevost, Forbes Masson, Dave Hill, Maggie McCarthy, Benedict Sandiford, Sarah Coward, John Baddeley and Michael Troughton. The music was composed by Paul Mottram and the producer was John Rolfe.